Did you notice you kind of caused a little bit of a stir on Twitter when you mentioned that you were doing this? Like, James went and mentioned how he hasn't been on yet.
Oh, really? I figured that you had already asked all these people, so that's why I mentioned it. So
no, it's part of the whole guy-girl rotation, like, going back and forth. I know a lot of guys who can do this show. Yeah. Like, the female quotient, I usually have to be a little bit more creative, so that's why when I meet somebody, I'm like, hey, come on the show!
Yeah.
I haven't asked James yet. I should get him on soon. Welcome to Wherever You Are. I'm Ryan McNeil in Toronto, Canada. And you're listening to the 42nd episode of the Matinee Cast, which means that this is going to provide the answer to the question of life.
What?
It's a Hitchhiker's Guide thing, but...
Which I still haven't read because I'm...
You should check it out.
I should.
It's the official podcast of thematinee.ca, your home for cinematic passion and perspective. I have some great friends in this town. Friends that put up with my movie geekery and some that even encourage it. And what's better is when those friends find other friends and introduce them to me, thus expanding my movie geek support network. Today's guest is indeed a friend who was introduced by another friend and has since become close friends with some of my other friends. Did you follow all that?
Friends.
There we go. Exactly. She's a charming young lady who sees a lot of films, thus her standards grow exponentially, and by the time the dust settles, only the best will do.
No.
We're back home this week. Please welcome, I'm going to botch your last name. Please welcome Leora Heilbrun.
Yeah, that's the correct pronunciation.
Got it. To the Matinee Cast, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm surprised you're so bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. You were out at the arts festival so late last night.
I was, until 6 in the morning.
Did you get any sleep?
I got, I think, about 3 hours.
Oh, I call that a nap.
Hence the drink.
That's a good point.
Yeah, let's just keep drinking.
There we go. Episode 42 is the Thanksgiving episode where we'll be discussing 50-50. We'll be talking about some listener feedback on Blu-rays, and we'll be talking about our top 5 things we're thankful for. But first, let's get to know more about my guest. This is Know Your Enemy. So, inquiring minds want to know, what was the first film you can remember seeing?
We were just talking about this. It was Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, wow.
Which I was dragged out of screaming and crying. And I still refuse to watch Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which is a downplayed version of that. And it was just terrifying.
What freaked you out so much?
Don't get me wrong. It is a scary man.
Yeah, I was going to say, it is kind of a freaky movie.
It's that torments these children with candy.
Yeah.
And chocolate. And it's just, you know, it didn't turn me off from candy and chocolate.
No, good. That's good.
Clearly.
Were you okay with, like, the Oompa Loompas? Because they...
I don't really remember the Oompa Loompas.
Little orange guys, green hair.
Yeah, I don't remember from the original, but I saw recently, as part of the Burton Blitz, I let myself watch parts of the remake, and... they weren't that scary. They were singing. They were like little men singing.
Yeah, they're more normal in the new one. They look like little people is what they look like. They look like carbon copy little people of all the same ones. And yeah, they sing.
Singing.
The original ones, they've got this green hair. They've got orange makeup. They sing too, but they just look really, really weird.
Yeah, I think I blocked out a lot of that movie because so terrified.
And like your parents took you?
It was part of summer camp, and I didn't do well at summer camp because I'm not really social. So I don't even remember how old I was, but I remember, I don't know if it was my mom or a counselor that took me out of the theater. It was like a makeshift theater that they set up for like tons of kids that they thought kids would enjoy this movie.
What was the last movie you saw?
Last movie I saw was Drive. I finally saw it. All the days are blurring into one. A few days ago, let's just say.
Check Twitter. I'm sure we can figure it out.
It's all on Twitter.
Yeah. What'd you think of Drive?
I really liked it. My company didn't like it at all.
Yeah.
Well, they're more knowledgeable about films than I am, so I think I'd go with their opinion.
I'd put you all at an even keel, to be honest.
Yeah, I liked it. It didn't live up to the hype. I think I wished I'd seen it before that started.
You know what? I think that was my impression as well. I liked it a lot, but going in that weekend, I read people talking about how it was a fantastic movie. It was the best movie they saw this year. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. I was like, really?
Yeah.
Have you not seen that much this year? Because it's good. It's a lot of fun. It's just, it's a cool movie, right?
It's cool, yeah.
And it looks pretty.
And you want to drive, and you want to,
Yeah.
And I don't drive.
No.
But I want to sit there with leather gloves.
And a scorpion jacket.
And a scorpion jacket that I have to ask around about.
One of the things about Drive is I realized that Ryan Gosling is kind of quickly becoming one of those actors that I'll see anything he's in. Mm-hmm. I don't have very many. I don't. There's almost no actors that I go because blah 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 is in it. Yeah. Oh yeah, you have a few.
Yeah, and I get very disappointed.
Oh, okay. See, and that's why. But just the four movies that I saw him in this year: Crazy Stupid Love, Drive, mm-hmm. Blue Valentine, and I saw Ides of March at TIFF. I loved him. I loved him in all of them. So he's any movie that he's in from mm-hmm. for a while now, I'll be just automatic. I'm in.
But those are all legitimately good movies on their own, right?
Well, but that's what I'm saying. I'm hoping that he's a sign that.
Oh, maybe.
I will eventually get burned on that, I'm sure.
You will, yeah. But like we'll see. I was with many of my actors.
Yeah. We were trying to decide this before we started to roll. Have we figured out the worst film you've ever seen?
Repo, the Genetic Opera.
That was
worse than. Actually, yeah, it was worse than New Moon.
Okay.
And Twilight.
Now. I gotta ask, because I keep hearing that it's like, it's a fantastic film in a cult, campy kind of way.
Yeah, the theater was packed with people that were loving it up, and
but not you.
But not me, and it's geared towards people like me, who love musicals, who love people like Giles, and who love, you know, Sarah Brightman, and, it had a great cast, it had singing, you know, big set pieces, but it just, none of it was memorable, or it was memorable in just an awful way. And, yeah, I was very disappointed.
That's unfortunate. See, and that's the thing. Like, I keep thinking I should actually see this. Like, it's one of those... Because I get accused of being kind of snobby sometimes.
Really?
So bad it's good doesn't really...
You're a
big fan. Thank you. So bad it's good doesn't usually land for me. So, but I'm trying to kind of broaden out my opinion.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I should really get around to seeing Repo, but if you're saying it's that bad.
No, it was pretty bad. You should ask him. I went with Sasha also, and we both love musicals. Mm. Love musicals. And we expected to love it, and just after 5 minutes, we just wanted to get out of there.
Oh, boy. Were you stuck in the middle? Like, could you have made an easy escape?
No, we could have made an easy escape.
You should have done it.
I wanted to give it a chance. I thought, maybe it gets better. Mm. Yeah, I've heard such good things about it. Not good things, but that it had the cult status.
That's unfortunate.
And,
what's a classic or an essential film that you haven't seen?
I haven't seen any Godard. I haven't seen any Truffaut. And so, therefore, I can't really call myself a film snob.
Okay.
Or Kurosawa. I know I'm not supposed to...
No Kurosawa?
I know.
Okay.
I'm trying to film.
See, because I've only seen very little Truffaut. I've seen, like, two of his films. I've seen no Godard, so you're okay there.
No, but
like,
you're supposed to reference Godard in everything.
That's what I hear, right? Kurosawa is kind of cool, actually. Like, a lot of his films I find... I don't know about the other two, how really... accessible they are,
but apparently really relevant to everything.
I guess I wouldn't know. I haven't seen any Godard. Kurosawa is actually, it's very, very accessible. So he's got like Rashomon is a movie where it was one of kind of the first ones to play with varying angles of a story, which you'll like they reference that kind of thing, like even just on Lost. Where they'll tell the same story, but you'll see it from a few different ways. Mm-hmm. He's got a film, Hidden Fortress. It's basically Star Wars. Like, most of it, George Lucas ripped off for Star Wars. And Seven Samurai is really cool. Mm. I say this every show. If you want to borrow, feel free.
I try not to mention him. I was going to go with a Godard and Truffaut.
Okay. You're in good company because I've seen very little of the first two, and the second one's a little bit of a different story. And last but not least, what's a film that for any reason you wish you'd had a hand in making?
Oh, I was going to say Moulin Rouge.
Ooh, that's a good answer.
It's just so much fun, and it's one of my favorites, and it stayed one of my favorites. I haven't seen it in... a long time, but I convinced my little cousin, like, years ago when she was, I think, like, 10 or 11 to see Moulin Rouge, and even now she's still referencing it, and it just, that love, I wish I had a part in something like that.
That is a really cool, and just, that one's, it's, like, for the love of music, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind
of
film.
Music and musicals, and for the love and passion, and just going for it and just...
I used to know people who actually weren't fussed about it.
Yeah.
Like, I found that if you don't know what you're getting into, you have to get past the first 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's when things are going really hyper.
And the sound of music and people can't really get past
the first montage with Smells Like Teen Spirit and all that.
Yeah,
basically, once you get past the elephant love medley,
once you get past
Nicole doing her little crazy thing, yeah. it all settles down. But I know a lot, I've known people who can't get that far. That's our friend Leora. Now you know her as well as we know her, or maybe not quite as much. But let's get to know more about you. This is your chance to come talk to me. On the last episode, I asked about upgrading DVDs to Blu-rays. Mm-hmm. Because we've had a Blu-ray player for just shy of a year, and even though you can, the selling point of it, like when I really kind of tipped over, was when I realized that you can play DVDs and they actually look a little bit better than if you just play them in a regular DVD player. But there's still a slight jump from DVD to Blu-ray. So what I ask people is their thoughts on upgrading DVDs that they already own to Blu-ray. And I got some cool answers. Our friend Matthew Brown from the Mammo podcast said, it depends on the frequency of use. If I don't watch the DVD more than once every 5 years, why upgrade? Even if it is a frequent watch, if the movie isn't much visually, I might not bother. 80 cinematography looks like ass, no matter the format. Now, I find this kind of funny, because listening to Matthew Brown talk about Blu-ray was one of the reasons why I finally jumped on board.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so that was pretty entertaining to get that little bit of comment. Our friend Rachel West said, I still regularly watch VHSs that I haven't upgraded to DVD. So, with the exception of Citizen Kane, she doesn't think she's upgraded anything. I kind of gotta enjoy the fact that she's still got all the VHSs.
And she still openly buys VHSs.
Yeah. Like, we have a VCR. It's not hooked up.
I haven't watched any of my VHSs in a long time.
No, me neither. Will Silver, who is on Twitter as @SilverEmulsion, said, I've tried to only upgrade the movies I absolutely love, or if the new edition is a serious upgrade in quality and or extras. The Killing is a great example. The old version was a standard transfer and had no extras. The new version was a Criterion, and there were lots of extras. And it also came with Killer's Kiss, too. He's kind of got my mindset. Like, I took a look earlier. I haven't upgraded very many stuff to Blu-ray, and I kind of want to keep it that way.
Yeah.
But that's usually, like, if it's something a lot older, that's kind of the way I look at it. Coria Tad, who was with you last night at Nuit Blanche.
He's smart.
He's very smart, actually. And he actually went off for quite a bit on Twitter. He said, if it's worth owning, it's worth owning in the highest quality. Okay. The movies I've upgraded are real favorites, stuff I watch and make use of. Economics is a factor, though. For example, I'm not spending $50 to upgrade Seven Samurai, but I would do it for $30. I guess $20 is a deal breaker for Corey.
I guess so.
I have upgraded stuff like The Adventures of Robin Hood, The Lord of the Rings trilogy, and my Pixar collection, but I made sure all of them were at good prices, too. My friend Beth said that she upgrades rarely. She finds that the Blu-ray player upconverts the quality of her DVDs enough that it's not really a necessity. Joel Bjorman, one of my listeners in Sweden, said, yeah, I know, eh?
Hi, Sweden.
Hi, Sweden. If it's the right film and so far has only received a bare-bones release, I'll upgrade. And last but not least, Alex the Film Forager said on Facebook, I've done it for a couple of visually stunning films, The Fall, Dark City, etc., and a few of my all-time favorites, but it's usually a gift, so I'm not paying for it. She's waiting on a Singin' in the Rain Blu-ray and a decent Brazil Blu-ray, but not many other plans. Luckily, my boyfriend upgrades a lot of our favorites because it's much more important to him. So I reap the benefits of our improved movie collection, but now we can never break up.
Oh, I hope he's not listening.
Yeah, no, I don't think he is. I know Alex listens, but I don't know if she plays it out for her. Do you have Blu-ray?
I do not have a Blu-ray player. No, but I've never made the upgrade.
But faced with this, like, would you think?
I think I would for favorites.
Okay.
And especially, I don't know who it was who said because of the extras.
Yeah.
I think if there were a lot of extras, I would upgrade.
Yeah.
But I tend to buy my DVDs and then it would be Blu-rays and then I never watch them.
Oh.
I think it's just so that I can have them in my collection.
Okay.
But I can see many of their points.
Yeah. See, I watch them. That's the thing is that I don't tend to have the TV on just to have it on. Mm-hmm. If I've got it on, it's kind of like, essentially, it's my radio. So, like, you know how some people, when they're puttering around the house, they'll have the radio playing?
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have a movie playing so that I can at least listen if I'm not specifically watching. So far, in having a Blu-ray player for almost a year, I'm happy to say that I've only upgraded 3 movies, so I'm doing pretty well. We're surrounded by DVDs here. So if we if we started going down the road of upgrading stuff just because we could, we'd throw around an awful lot of money. So we're trying to be diligent about what gets the Blu-ray treatment. Mm-hmm.
So which ones did you upgrade?
I upgraded. Well, it's funny that Corey mentions the economics of the situation because he specifically talked me into upgrading Citizen Kane. I wasn't really looking to go out and grab it, but then him and
Rachel also mentioned.
Well, Rachel works for a supplier, yeah, so she gets it at a deal, yeah. Right? We got together and Corey and a new friend of ours who started coming out to the Toronto Blogger Night. Her name is Titania. They were talking about, oh, you got to upgrade Citizen Kane. It's a great new transfer and it's got all this great stuff in it. Corey, meanwhile, you know, he has, like, no interest in doing it. He's talking about it because it's my money. Yeah. Oh, yeah, go out and buy it. Come on, you got to do it. So that's one that I've upgraded. I upgraded The Killing, which was one that Silver Emulsion mentioned. And there's a third one that I'm forgetting. Oh, and The Shining, which I just bought it last week and I just rewatched it, too. Mm-hmm. And that was, my old one wasn't even widescreen.
Oh,
so, okay. You know, I had to do it.
Yeah.
And it looked pretty. Yeah, so, it kind of sounds like hearing what you're saying and what everybody else is saying, it kind of sounds like that's the prevailing wisdom. That as pretty as they look and as much, you know, as neat as they are, that because the old ones look so good and because, you know...
And the price point. I can understand that. Blu-rays are, like, very expensive.
Yeah, if they came down, if they were more in line with what DVDs are... costing, like if a new release was 20 or 25 bucks, then sure, but they're still clocking in at 30, 35,
yeah,
40 bucks sometimes
more.
Yeah, so no,
especially for the Criterion.
Yeah, well, that's this episode's question. My next question for next episode is we'll be kind of crouching up on Halloween by the next episode. And last year, I put together I've got a huge blind spot for horror.
Yeah,
I haven't seen very much, partially because I'm sort of a pussy. But
they'll hold you.
Thank you.
She'll comfort you at night.
Yeah, right.
I'm not your pussy.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah.
You seem very courageous.
I'm not.
I feel like you would hold Ryan.
So last year, I actually put together a very long list of horror movies I haven't seen yet. Mm-hmm. And what I'm hoping people can do is go to that post. Where there's the long list at the bottom. The post can be found at www.thematinee.ca/confession. And it's my confession that I haven't seen much horror.
I think that's when I first met you.
Might have been.
Yeah, it sounds very familiar.
Might very well have been.
Yeah.
Go through that list. I want to know, of that list, what are the 4 or 5 that I should make an effort? I want to see some scary movies around Halloween, but I'm not going to get through nearly all of them, but I want to kind of move some up the queue. So
take a The Exorcist?
Oh, don't get me started. I'll talk to you about that in a minute. But go through that list. Let me know either on Twitter, matinee_CA, Facebook, facebook.com/darkmatinee, or just drop me an email, ryan@thematinee.ca. Let me know which ones on that list should I make a priority to see and, you know, why. And that will take us to our review for this episode, The New Slang. And this episode, The New Slang, is 50-50. Was directed by Jonathan Levine. It was written by Will Reiser, and it stars Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Seth Rogen, Anna Kendrick, and Bryce Dallas Howard. And for those who don't know, 50-50 is about a character named Adam Lerner, that's Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who discovers one day that he's got a rare type of tumor growing against his spine. So when he tells his friends and his family that he has cancer, we follow along with his journey in terms of fighting it. His closest circle in this is his best friend Kyle, that's played by Seth Rogen. His psychiatrist, played by Anna Kendrick, her name is Dr. Kate. And there's also his mom, played by Angelica Houston, and his girlfriend at the time as well. I almost forgot about her, named Rachel. That's Bryce Dallas Howard. What'd you think? What'd you think of 50-50?
I really liked it. I saw it before the film festival, before anything was really said about it.
Have you watched it since then?
I wanted to watch okay. it since then, but I tried to fit it into my schedule.
So it might be a little foggy.
I liked it, but I didn't like the constant change, which is what a lot of people liked about it, the constant change in tone, how it really skillfully handled all of that together. But I thought, stick with one, stick with the comedy, or stick with the romantic subplot. I don't know. I wanted it to be a little dark. It didn't really take, which you have up there, it didn't really take cancer seriously enough, I felt.
Okay.
Was my main problem with it. But then I read so much about it, and people really loved this movie, that I thought, okay, well, maybe it was a time that I'd seen so many crappy movies, and maybe I just was... There was something wrong with me at the time. I don't know. So I really wanted to rewatch it because I want to really love it because I love the cast and there's a lot of people in it that I would see anything they're in except for Twilight, which Anakin. Sorry, Anna Kendrick.
It's okay.
And it has a lot of people that are based out of theater backgrounds, which I really liked about it. And it has the great Joseph Gordon-Levitt, which, let's talk about you meeting Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Well, we'll talk about that another time. I think a lot of people heard that story, but no.
It was great.
I really, really liked him in this film. This might be his best performance, mm-hmm. actually. I'm a fan of his. I liked him very, very much in 500 Days of Summer yes. and Inception and everything he did when he was younger. But he has to play something here. When I wrote about this, I wrote that his emotions seem to change and they've got little slivers of a lot at the same time. So he'll be talking and he'll be talking about something he's angry about, but you can see that it also saddens him, or you can see him joking about something, but you can also see that he's weary, and he kind of has to tiptoe around these things and bring them all together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he did that really, really well.
Oh, yeah.
I thought this kind of character, this kind of story, it lends itself to somebody just being very, very stoic for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if this is something you're going through, you're gonna be much more reserved. You're going to be much more quieter and you're not going to be as reactive as he is. He's very, very chatty for somebody who's going through as much. And that was what I really liked about him, is that he mm-hmm. brings all these different emotions and he mixes them all very, very subtly.
Yeah.
You liked him in this as well, I assume.
I did. I thought he was the best part of the film.
Was there anything in particular that grabbed you about him?
Grabbed me? Again, a lot of it, which is a lot of what I liked about Drive, but a lot of it is written on his face. You don't really need much dialogue. I mean, he was chatty, but the quiet moments where it was just all there in the office with him and Anna Kendrick, I thought was really well played.
Now, it kind of feels like in this movie that actually it's one of the rare movies where I liked everybody. Usually when I watch a movie like this, there's an actor or two that I'm like, either they didn't work or they didn't bring their A-game.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in this movie, like Seth Rogen is really, really good here.
Yeah, which, because he was essentially playing Seth Rogen.
He was, but he was also dialed down a little bit. Like, he wasn't going
At the end, I felt, was really...
But just in general, like, he wasn't going quite so crazy, quite so schlubby as he usually does. He has a moment or two.
Yeah, in the bar.
Yeah.
He gets to be really, he's very
Seth Rogen. But I liked him. Anna Kendrick, she's another one where if she's in a movie that's mm-hmm. not Twilight... I've got a moment of interest. I know that not everybody loves her, but I actually really, really like what she does.
Mm-hmm.
I liked her in this movie, of course, as the somewhat overmatched, very young doctor student.
Mm-hmm. I really like their dynamic together.
Yeah, and but just even listening, it's weird. When somebody gives you advice, you kind of know in your head whether or not you're going to listen to it.
Yeah.
Do you know people who they'd love to tell you advice and whatnot?
Oh, yeah. I have a lot of people that give me advice.
Exactly. Exactly. But she has this way, she finds this way in this movie of, she's not just giving advice, but she's talking to him, right? And she's never digging in and arguing with him and just kind of like listening and trying to keep him talking, let him figure it out for himself.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really well done for somebody to, for that kind of character who's supposed to be a lot younger to kind of have that much maturity.
Yeah, which I think is why she was cast. That she's always cast in the same type of... sort of type of... except for Twilight.
The other three movies we've seen her in. Yeah. And Angelica Houston, who I loved...
who I thought was a lot like my mother, so I thought,
Oh, really? Oh, right,
that's my mom. Okay. That's how my mom would act.
My mom probably would act the same way, although I think I'd have less of a say with my mom. But Lindsay brought this up. It's one of the first times in a while we've actually seen her play things a little bit straighter. Usually she tends to be more of an eccentric. Mm-hmm. Here, her eccentricity was just kind of, she's a very weird mom. Yeah, exactly. But she's also got the added... bonus of the fact that she's also wife to a husband with Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. So she's trying to kind of juggle all this and be there for her son and not smother. And she plays it just really, really beautifully. There's a scene, I don't really want to spoil it, because there's a scene in the last bit of the movie where
he asks how she's doing.
He asks, how are you? It finally clicks into him to ask, how are you? Mm-hmm. And she talks about like what's been going on. And I just that moment alone, I was worth the price of admission for me for Angelica Houston.
Oh, see, the last scene was a price of admission. Ah. Which I can't.
No, we're going to leave that one alone. Yeah. But I like that one.
Cute.
Yeah. So you're saying that they didn't really take the cancer serious enough. Like, you know, there's that old saying, as serious as cancer.
Yeah. But at the same time, it would have been a completely different movie. So maybe I was going in expecting a darker movie, and then that's why I thought...
Okay.
But then, you know, it's a Seth Rogen film. Right. So really, what was I... I wasn't expecting this Sundance-heavy film.
And the thing that I like, though, is I thought with the comedy, they actually found... They found the right tone for it, because I think if they'd made it too stoner happy... you know, or like too slapsticky, that it really would have been a disservice.
Yeah.
Like, because let's be honest here, cancer is a pretty big deal.
Yeah,
you know, so you can only go so far with laughing; otherwise, you're going to cry.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think they found found that sweet spot, and when you watch, like when you do go back to it, that that'll play a little bit better. I'm sure it was a little bit jarring.
The end, I can't really say. I don't want to give any spoilers.
The end was played very well.
It was heavy enough, I think.
At that point. You know what? The one thing actually that I found that I really, really dug about it was there comes a point, obviously, like in case people don't know, the writer lived. The writer actually wrote this based on his real life experiences.
Right.
And obviously if he lived, you know, if he survived to write the script, he's fine. But there actually comes a moment in this movie, I don't know about you, but I wasn't quite sure if he was going to live or not.
Yeah. See, I didn't know this story beforehand.
Okay.
I only read it afterwards.
Okay. Now, so did you have that kind of same feeling?
Yeah.
Like, you get to a certain point and it's like, uh-oh. You're going along and everybody seems to be really encouraging and he's in really good spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you think he's going to be fine. It's just the way the movie kind of starts talking, the way everybody starts talking, the way he starts acting.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, you really start to think, you're like, are they going to kill him off?
I thought they would.
You know?
I thought for sure they would. Especially with them in the waiting room with his mother and Anna Kendrick. I thought, okay, this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship of something.
Yeah. And that's like that's really an achievement for a movie like this, because it kind of feels like everybody, you know, you see a movie like this where they kind of start laughing it up and talking about
stoner comedy.
Yeah, and talking about beating the odds and everything like that. It kind of seems like, you know, there's going to be some bad times, but he's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
For the movie to actually really make us think for a second, oh shit, maybe he won't be
more
okay.
More than a second. I was there, you know, nailed by
it. Uh-oh. Yeah. That's a pretty good achievement for a movie like this.
Yeah, it was very well written.
So if you were to take one thing away from 50-50 as the thing you liked best, can you think of what you might take with you?
Probably the scene, I don't want to give anything away, but the scene where he finds the cancer book, where he has this, you know, companion and the support that he didn't realize quite... you know, the magnitude of it.
Yeah, that was...
That one moment, and it was wordless, and it was just there.
Yeah, because it also really... That moment also really kind of reshapes your opinion of everything.
Yeah.
No, that is a great moment.
What was yours?
I don't know why this was the thing that occurred to me, but there's a long little back and forth with Katie, with the doctor, about her inability to, like, touch him. And not seem awkward. Like, what is he
touching the hand.
He compares it to like being slapped by a sea lion.
Yeah.
I like that because that was the thing. Every time she reached out and grabbed him, I was just like, Like I kind of, you know, I have no problem with being touched, but it just, it looked really forced.
Yeah, yeah.
So I love that they keep coming back to the fact that she can't seem to touch him and it not be awkward.
Mm-hmm.
So that was,
felt very natural too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, I liked them together. They were very cute.
Me too, for sure. So, we end the review by rating the film. We're going to get to more stuff, don't we? So on a scale of 1 to 4, what would you give 50-50?
Can I do like 3.7?
No. Okay, well, we'll go, you say 3.5.
Let's say 3.5, but a little bit more.
Well, and what I think is, what you're saying is 3.5, and the odds are it could probably even go to a 4 when you rewatch.
Odds, the
50-50 odds. The 50-50 odds. And actually, for me, it's a 3.5 as well.
Yeah.
There was one or two things that I really was, I kind of wasn't fussed about, but I really, really enjoyed this film. I didn't think I was going to enjoy it quite this much. So 3.5 for me. And of course, we'd love to hear what you folks have to think about, have to say about 50-50. So drop me a line if you want. Ryan@thematinee.ca, matinee_ca on Twitter, or all the other various places.
Thank you very much for coming out this evening. Thank you. Get fucked too kind. Hold your applause. This is your song, not mine. Thank you. Please hold your applause.
So as you folks listen to this, it is Thanksgiving weekend here in Canada. We get to celebrate it early. The United States, they got to wait till November. Although they get like 4 days.
They get 4 days?
Wasn't
1 day a shopping day?
The Friday. They get like Thursday, Friday. They get Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I think a lot of places even give them like half of Wednesday.
Really?
Yeah, because there's a lot of travel involved. They have a big parade, though.
That's true. They have a big parade. Yeah. We don't have a big parade.
No, we don't. But we do have a lot of food. Did your family do a lot of stuff for Thanksgiving?
My family does not do Thanksgiving.
Really?
No, not at all. They're very Jewish.
Well, we do 3, so we're kind of the opposite. And by the time it's all over, I want to see no more food for a year. But
and then the next day, I am hungry.
Yeah, exactly. I've got leftovers that last me till Christmas. Mm. Of course, it's also just the time, like you were saying, like you've gone with boyfriends to their Thanksgiving.
That's great.
I wish we could bring you to one of our 3. Oh. That would be really cool.
I could be your stand-in.
Exactly. Yeah, you could go with Lindsay to one of hers.
Yeah. The family, hi.
But of course, it is, you know, whether it's the American one in November or the Canadian one in October, it's the time of year where you give thanks for the things that have been great this year and whatnot. So on the show, that's what we do here. We kind of take a second and really geek out and talk about the movie related stuff that we're thankful for in any way, shape, or form. So why don't you get us started? What was the first thing you're thankful for this year?
You said anything movie related.
Yes.
So I am a big fan of my popcorn. So
I like that.
And not just in popcorn type films and, you know, all
right.
films like 50-50. I'm sitting there with my popcorn and my cheese topping popcorn. Like, I don't like AMC because they don't have the cheese topping. They used to.
Okay.
And then they took it away. It's just like, I don't buy your I don't support you anymore.
No, yeah. Right? Well, yeah, exactly. No.
I know they have the slushies for Lindsay, but
they took away the Coke and I'm going to boycott.
Thank you.
They switch Coke for lemon lime.
I know.
I'm sorry, but what are they thinking?
I don't know.
Who wants lemon lime slushies?
Sasha, actually.
Really?
That's just wrong and disgusting. Sorry, I'll leave you.
Sorry. We love you, Sasha. Anyway, so popcorn. So I like my cheese topping popcorn. And there's a quite a process to it. But
do you do it in layers?
I do it in layers, yeah.
You got it. Otherwise, it's just all on the top.
Yeah, and then people choke on it. And
that's not good.
Although most people don't want my popcorn because it's smelly. They're like, they don't want the cheese topping.
I've sat next to you at the movies. It's not that bad.
No, I don't think it's that bad. But I think now I'm just so apprehensive about it because did I write about the story about the lady who complained and wanted her money back? We were seeing a TIFF film late at night and like the smell was just so appalling to her that she loudly complained and asked for her money back for the film. Like, I think it was like $20 for a late night.
I would have moved. If I were her.
There were seats available. She could have moved. But the whole time during the movie, she's like, oh, can you like not put that towards me? It wasn't towards her.
It was, I was just sitting in your lap.
Yeah. And I, you know, that was my meal of the day, I'm sure.
You know, that's popcorn. The weird thing. Like, I've heard people talk about how, you know, the smell of popcorn, you know, and it's distracting when I've never understood that possibly because I like popcorn.
Yeah.
I've never totally got that. Now, you know what else is funny? Because I was thinking about this when you mentioned being thankful for good popcorn.
Yes.
Because a lot of places you go and it's not that fresh.
No,
you
no.
know, like, and especially
most theaters. It's not yeah, and especially they have it sitting there, and they're like, "Oh yeah, we just popped it," and you know they didn't.
Yeah,
just
bullshit.
Pop
you just popped
yeah.
it. We're really thankful, by the way.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is that people kind of get too dazed by the size of the bag. It's like, oh look, I got this great big bag for five mm-hmm. bucks or whatever. It's like, yeah, but it's a great big bag of stale. I'd rather one of the wee little bags.
Yeah, and
but
it's
something
fresh.
That's like just off the thing. Yeah,
mm-hmm, exactly.
So. Yeah, no.
Very
for so,
intuitive.
And you find that at the Scotiabank Theatre and the Varsity Theatre, that's where you get
they
the
have
best.
The most fresh. They don't have it sit there in that little fridge type contraption.
Yeah,
yeah. They actually pop it fresh pretty frequently.
Well, that
yeah.
is a that is a good
so
thing
I'm
to start with
for
sure.
Them.
Yeah.
Thank you. To
yeah.
the staff and
speaking of
Bank
Thanksgiving
and
food, my first one's actually kind of funny, and it's going to sound weird, but stay with this tour.
Right.
I'm actually thankful for Twitter. In a movie-going capacity.
Oh.
Well, here's why. Because I came... I think everybody knows by now that I came to Twitter kicking and screaming.
Yes.
I did not get it. There's still moments where I don't get it, even though I use it. But my first or second film festival, I think it would probably be my second film festival back in 2003, I wondered aloud how anybody did the film festival before the age of cell phones. Because you're trying to coordinate where you are in line, being able to text people, being able to call people. Back before everybody had a cell phone, I'm like, how in the world would you find somebody, find
you
out they're running behind?
The line. I remember.
But if you're also, but if, no, no, but like, yeah, but if you're something, like let's say something changes, or you're both running late or something.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you know, how do you make a decision of, well, do I go in or do I wait for them, or are they 5 minutes off, or are they 30 minutes off? It's like, how do you do all that before you had a cell phone? So that was
now. I can't remember.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That was back in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
This festival that we just did was the first one where I was using Twitter. Now, I don't know if you were either A, using Twitter. You were doing the festival last year.
Yeah, I was, but I wasn't heavily using
okay.
Twitter.
And beyond the fact that it was awesome for coordinating things.
It was.
Because you could, you know, you just kind of look through and, oh, this person's at the movie I'm going to.
Mm-hmm.
Can you save me
Corey.
A seat?
I'd
yeah.
like to thank Corey.
Yeah, I'm very thankful for Corey. You know, the guy who's usually up towards the front of the line.
Mm-hmm.
So along with the fact that you could see who was at what film and, you know, hey, can you save me a seat?
Yeah.
It was cool to see what people were thinking of the films. It was cool to kind of mm-hmm. hear about reactions that people were getting and get all of that instantly. That was insane. I have not, this was my 10th film festival. I've never had something like that. The last one I did before this, I met up with a lot of people, but
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't know, for instance, that you were at the same screening I was. You were just 20
there.
Rows behind me.
Yeah.
Now I can see, oh, hey, she's here, and look for you, and hey, let's
mm-hmm.
watch a movie together.
Yeah.
It made the film festival specifically just a whole different experience. So I am
yeah.
thankful for that. I'm also just thankful for the fact that it's leading to other movie conversations. I've only really been using it for stuff for the site.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's been, you know, a lot of the comments like we were talking about with Blu-rays, that was like
yeah.
one great big long Twitter conversation
mm-hmm.
this week. So it seems strange because I'm a little bit of a
newbie,
yeah,
noob.
Plebe or something, or a Luddite, if you wish, to Twitter. But I am actually thankful for Twitter and how it's affected how it's affected my movie going experience and my movie conversations.
So I'm glad we all got you.
Yeah, exactly. What's the next thing you're thankful for this year?
What is the next? I'm thankful for actors that make me see really crappy movies,
mm-hmm.
but they're consistently good. They consistently try really hard. People like Sam Rockwell. Bill Murray, who just, it could be a really bad movie, but for those 5 minutes that they're on screen, you think, oh, this is fantastic, and they try, and I think they know it's a crappy movie, but they're still trying for their paycheck, and it's nice to know that there are people out there who give it their all, no matter what.
You also mentioned Minnie Driver.
I saw Barney's version, and I really didn't like Barney's version. I saw Conviction, Sam
Rockwell
again.
I'm sorry, I have to say this out loud. You know what I just thought of in the back of my head when you said you didn't really like Barney's version?
Yeah.
I thought, but you're Jewish.
You have to.
I'm sorry, that's terrible. But it was just, you know. It's
you
like,
have to like Barney's version.
Yeah, wait a minute. But she's good
it's
in it.
It's all Jewish. She was not, was she Jewish? Oh yeah, she was Jewish. Yeah, okay.
Well,
so
she,
maybe that's
she, but she was good in it?
She was good in it. She was really great in it. She was one of the highlights, besides the always great. Paul Giamatti, I'm very thankful for Paul. Yeah, he's awesome. He's always great. Anyway, so
any other actors besides those ones?
So I have a long list of them, but those are the ones that first came to mind. Philip Seymour Hoffman. I really didn't like Charlie Wilson's War, but Philip Seymour Hoffman is so great in it. But you're like, oh, maybe I should give that movie a second chance because he's just so fantastic. Same with Moneyball. I didn't really like Moneyball. I don't think he really liked it much either.
No, Hoffman. Well, but I didn't like because they didn't give him much to do.
They didn't.
Why is he there?
Because it was the director of Capote, and he was probably owed him something.
I guess
it was. What movie did I see recently? And I felt like the actors owed the director some money. So there are a lot of actors like that. Sheen. Michael Sheen does not get any recognition.
No, he's always great. He's
always great. Even in Twilight. We're always mentioning Twilight in this podcast.
Yeah.
Michael Sheen is fantastic.
Well, you saw him. Were you one of the ones who saw Midnight in Paris 15 times this summer?
I saw it twice.
But he's amazing in that.
And he's fantastic in that. And the reason why I want to drink more wine.
Because of the way he talks about wine.
Well, he loves
wine. Even when he's being a dick?
Yeah, exactly. See, I didn't find him to be too much of a dick. I know he was supposed to be, but I hated Rachel McAdams' character so much.
She's a bitch.
Yeah, she's...
In that movie.
Yeah.
Which takes some doing. I tend to like Rachel McAdams.
I like her. Yeah. I think she's another one. Yeah, she's another one. We're thankful for the couple of Rachel McAdams. Yeah.
Well, I mentioned earlier Ryan Gosling's a guy who, I'm thankful for him, and I'll see him in anything. Not to play off the same movie again, Carey Mulligan is actually, she's an actress who, when I find out she's in something, I'm automatically interested because I like pretty much everything.
She hasn't done a bad film, though, which is why I didn't include her, because all of these actors...
Oh, okay, they can make a bad film. I
initially had her as an actor. Daniel Day-Lewis was up there also. Okay. Nine, I really wanted to love Nine. And let's go to yours now.
I don't know. Well, my next one's kind of a weird one, and again, it's kind of a new thing for me. Other than Twitter, I'm actually thankful for the seats up close that nobody sits in.
I hate those.
Well, no. Not the seats right down front, but, you probably notice that a lot of the times when we go to film festival stuff or that kind of thing, the group of us here in Toronto, we tend to sit in the third or the fourth or the fifth row.
Or the first. You and Lindsay usually try and move.
Not that close.
But the first after the first section.
Yeah. So at the light box, for instance, there's the row of seats that's like right in that aisleway.
Mm-hmm, where you get all the leg room.
Yeah. I love those. First of all, because nobody likes to sit there, because they all think, oh, that's too close.
It is still kind of close.
It's kind of close.
I find my neck still kind of hurts.
I'm all right with that, because the thing I like about it is that the movie completely fills my vision. Like, I really, really get lost in it. If I'm sitting back further, and I don't always sit down front. It depends on the movie. It just kind of depends on my mood. But if I'm sitting down close, that's all I'm seeing is the screen. You know, maybe every once in a while I'll see what's going on next to me out of my peripheral. Mm-hmm. If I'm sitting back further, I can see people coming in and out.
See people's Blackberries go off.
I can see people's phones. Yeah. That kind of thing. I'll get even distracted by the usher coming in to fill in the little
cart. Oh, yes, with the little flashlight.
Once in a blue moon, you don't get this often, but every once in a while, if it's like the first week or something that a movie's come out, you've also got the security guys hanging out with their stupid little night visions. Yeah. If I'm down real close, I don't see that. So along with the fact that there's no distractions when you're sitting down that low, and that you could just lose yourself in the movie. It's also cool because not a lot of people like to sit there, that you can almost always get those seats.
That's true.
So I'm thankful that, you know, there's some theaters where those seats are still a pretty good spot to watch a movie, because you're right. There's some movies where they're way too close and your neck is like
neck
at a right
hurts,
angle.
I get headaches.
But theaters where they've got really good spots down close, I'm thankful for those because I can just lose myself in the movie for 2 hours and not get distracted.
Okay, thankful for close seats.
I am, yeah. What, you know, we kind of
are unique.
I know. We kind of just mentioned your next one, but what's the next thing that you're thankful for?
I'm thankful for the rare time where you go to a movie and no cell phones go off. There's no people loudly talking. There are no ringtones going off in the middle of the movie, and people actually answer their phone.
Oh.
I hate that. Just or they look around as if it's not their phone, you know it's their phone.
You know your phone. Yeah,
you know it's your ringtone. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I wait for it to, like, keep ringing. Yeah. At least reach down. I mean, I've had my phone go off once or twice, and Sasha has, like, given me mean looks. And rightfully so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But then at least I turn it to silent as quickly as possible. But those people that let it ring and ring and ring, and it's just awful. And just turn off your phone. And if you can't, like, tear yourself away from, like, whatever's going on your phone for 2 hours, why are you there?
Yeah.
It just, so the rare time where you go to a movie, and it happens quite a bit during the film festival, usually when there's an older audience.
Yeah.
So Winter Garden Theater, the Elgin during the day. Where everyone's really wrapped up in the film, and you just, there's an energy about that. And the film doesn't even necessarily have to be that good.
Yeah.
But everyone's just so invested in it, and nobody's, you know, looking at their phone or seeing, like, what email they got. And the amount of times you see girls checking, like, their email, are you kidding me? Like, what email are you expecting? DiCaprio is not going to email you. But... yeah, so I'm very thankful for that, for the audiences that are very focused on the film, where you're there, and you're there for the film. I mean, really, what else are you there for?
Yeah, why did you just pay $12?
Yeah, exactly, or sometimes more. Yeah. Why are you there at the gala paying $50 and you're checking your phone all the time?
Yeah.
So I'm thankful for those rare moments where everyone is really into the film, and everyone's concentrated on the film and not their distractions. We live in such an ADD society.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it's nice to have an escape and a distraction. That's what movies are partially supposed to be about. And
absolutely. You know where, it's kind of funny, you know where I found some of the best behaved crowds are? You know how they, every, like, once a month or so, they put on those productions where it's like a closed circuit showing of a musical or an opera or a ballet or something like that?
Because it's an older crowd.
It's an older crowd. They're going to see something specific, and it's their only shot to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta be honest, this is weird. The crowd that goes and sees a live event at a movie theater is becoming better behaved than the crowd that goes to see the live event.
Yeah.
You go to a theater these days, and people they're starting to become chatty. Yeah. They're starting to check their phones.
They check their phones.
But because these people only have one kick to see
something from London.
Yeah.
Phantom of the Opera.
You know, it's a one night only usually showing. They might have one more shot at it, but that's it. They are all, it is dead silent.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is whispering, no phones, no nothing, but I'm with you. The nights where you get to go and you don't see little blue fireflies.
Yeah, lights going on. Yeah. And people clap at the end, and people clap, you know, as if they're going to a theater production. I went to The Lion King, and there are people of all ages who should have been checking their phone the whole time. And Lion King, how old is Lion King?
Yeah, how many times?
And they were all sitting there quietly, and some people were singing along quietly, and then there was such clapping and, like, you know, such joy at the end, and you feel it, and you walk away, and you're like, okay, that's why I go to the movies.
Yeah, that is a very, very good one. When I read that one, I was like, oh, that would have been my number one. That's a really, really good one.
Other than Twitter,
yes. Well, my next one, actually, my next one's kind of a short one. Where we live here in Toronto, we're actually really, really lucky because...
Young and eligible?
Young and eligible. I'm one of the people who still rents DVDs and Blu-rays. I know a lot of people, they use the Netflix or
they download.
Use,
people they are download. Shocked when they say, I'm going to rent a film. They're like, I know. Rent a film.
You know, or we do use on demand, but I rent them because, one, what I'm going to talk about in a second here is convenient, and two, it's cheap. I can rent movies for anywhere between $3 and $5.
Queen Video?
Not exactly, but close.
Bay Video?
Where I go is a place right around the corner from here called Upstairs Video.
Oh, I've never been there.
They used to be called Film Fest Video. They were
right.
Okay, they moved. And it was kind of funny because when they said that they were... like, I went there one time to rent something, and I saw a little sign. They said, we're moving starting on May the 1st. So, oh, where are you guys moving to? They said, oh, do you know blah, blah, blah street? I said, yes, I do. I live on blah, blah, blah street. They're like, oh, we're moving to that corner. So... the
so
fact,
it's literally right.
It's right on the top. Yeah, it's on the corner of Young and here. I don't want to
near the nail salon.
Yeah, exactly. So to have Upstairs Video so close is really cool that I can walk there in like 3 minutes, and they've got the best stuff. They've got stuff that's very, very much like what Queen Video carries.
Mm-hmm.
They're not just like what used to be Blockbuster or what is now still Rogers, where it's all just the mainstream sexy titles. They have that too.
Yeah.
But they've got you know, the good films, yeah, they've got the culty stuff. They've got the festival favorites. They've got a lot of docs, a lot of foreign, and the guys who work there all know their stuff. So if you walk in and you say, "Hey," you know, if you were to walk in and say, "I'm looking to rent some Godard."
Yeah, they would know what I'm talking about.
Exactly. Yeah.
They were like, I'm blank.
Yeah, hell, they've got a whole section for
Godard.
We've
got the Nicolas Cage film.
Yeah, you know, was Dane Cook in that? No, he wasn't. This last summer, I did a podcast series with my friend in England, Simon.
Simon, that's so British.
Yeah, it is. He drinks coffee. Usually I'm drinking the tea and he's making fun of me. But we did each episode on a specific director, and to have them right there and be able to watch all these movies by these directors who we were talking about, it was great. I was able just, you know, to find everything I was looking for. Like, I think there was only one time where I was looking for a movie and I had to go somewhere else because they didn't have it.
Yeah.
And to have them convenient, I know a lot of people are moving away from DVD. Everybody seems to be just, they want it on demand and...
Yeah, right there.
Yeah, but I still like being able to go and pick something up, so... Upstairs Video is a really, really cool source for this, and A, I'm thankful that they're around. B, I'm thankful that they're so friggin' convenient. That's mine.
Kind of gives away where you live.
Sort of. If you're in Toronto and you know where Upstairs Video is, you know where I am. Your next one and my next one kind of play off each other, so why don't you start us with the next thing that you're thankful for? And this is actually something that's kind of near and dear to my heart, too, so...
TIFF is a big love of mine. It's my vacation every year. Other people go on a beach and then, you know, they go on a resort or a cruise and I go to TIFF.
Yeah.
And, you know, I spend more than $1,000. Yeah, it's a lot of money seeing movies, being in a darkened theater and having lack of food. Anyway, so specifically about TIFF, the lineups, everyone hates the lineups. I hate the lineups, but what happens in the lineups is just pure magic. And you meet people from all over the world who've come in. They just want to see the movies. A lot of the time, they don't want to see the celebrities.
No.
At least the people in line that you meet. They don't want to... I mean, that's a big part of it, and that's why it's become so huge, because of all, you know, the George Clooney's that fly in.
Of course, I've stood in more than a few. They tend to be in ungodly hours.
Yes.
Sometimes you're there early, you're there long.
For hours to get a seat in the theater where you're already guaranteed a seat with your ticket.
Yeah.
But you're there in the 2 hour, sometimes more lineup.
Yeah. But like you said, the cool thing is that because everybody is very like-minded, I found that I wasn't in too many lineups this year. Like aside from, I was in the same day line twice. There were two times where I got up early to go get tickets. Everything else I was either just grabbing and going, or it was like the lineup to get into the movie.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. I found that everybody was in a pretty good mood.
Yes.
Do you find that people are generally there, even if things aren't really going their way?
Or they're really tired and hungry and exhausted and they've seen already like 40 movies. Yeah, they're still passionate about what they're about to see.
Yeah, or what they want to see or what you've seen. Like, there's always a cool, you know, and that conversation will kind of stem over into, you live nearby. Oh, how do you like living in the city?
It stems to some great conversations.
You know,
with total strangers that you have only for that brief period of time.
I know.
You never see them again.
No.
They don't want to see you again,
But think about it.
Like, fantastic.
Would you talk to somebody like that, like if you were waiting to get on a streetcar?
Or waiting to get my coffee?
No.
No.
No, no. Do you talk to people like this?
And you wait in long lineups for some of these things.
Exactly.
Tim Horton's lineup, you never strike up a conversation about how their day is.
Yeah, you know, I know people who, they're on, like, the GO train with the same cluster of 25 people every day.
Every morning.
But they don't talk to them.
No.
They know them to see them. They're like, there's a woman on my streetcar every single day. I know, I would know her to see her in a lineup.
Mm-hmm.
I've never talked to her. Why would I?
No.
You know, it's just weird, but this is the moment.
Yeah, I think I'm very thankful.
No,
for that
is a very cool thing to be thankful
And you always
for.
Get great suggestions.
Yes.
I mean, you could read the paper and you could read what the critics are saying, but you hear someone talk about a film and you're like, okay, I want to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time it turns out to be the correct recommendation for you.
Yeah.
And it's nice.
It is a very, very cool thing.
The city kind of comes alive.
It does.
Like-minded, passionate
people.
And you don't feel so weird.
No. No, you don't at all. Like, for talking to perfect strangers.
Yeah, you feel part of a special group of people. You're not met with, like, really? You see 50 movies, that's your vacation?
Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
Yeah, that's the rest of
the year. I'm seeing 60 movies, too.
Yeah, this is it's that point where I tell people, yeah, I'm seeing 24, and I'm, like, a rookie.
Yeah,
you know, like, 24, come on. Up your game. Well, my thing that I'm thankful for next is actually, it kind of stems from that as well. Is I'm really, really thankful for the Lightbox. It's been around now for just over a year. Yep. And my first experience there was around this time last year. It was last Thanksgiving when I went for Apocalypse Now and got to do a conversation with Walter Murch, who is the editor of Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, we were
just
talking about that last night.
Oh, yeah?
It was all of our favorite films, and a lot of us had seen it at the Lightbox.
Very cool. Now, the Lightbox, for those who aren't in Toronto, I'm sure people have heard me mention it a few times. It took a long time to actually get off the ground. Like, they were talking about developing it and building it for years. Mm-hmm. And then even once the boards went up and they started digging a hole there to start building it, it seemed to take a long time to actually get done because they're relying totally on contributions.
Yeah, funding.
So it just, for the longest time, I tend to not be a cynic. I'm stupidly optimistic, but I swore up and down that this thing would either just never properly happen or once it did, it would just fail very, very quickly.
But
I'm very thankful that it not only did it get done, but it is, and while there are still bugs to be worked out, it has been in this last year just a godsend for moviegoers because first of all, just as going to see movies, it's awesome. Like the theaters themselves are fantastic. They're all contained within the building itself, so it's always dead silent. Like you can't hear what's going on outside.
Yeah, as opposed to other theaters where you can hear the boom boom.
Yeah, you can hear what's going on.
Transformers.
You can go and hear what's going on in the theater next to you, or if somebody opens the door to like go to the bathroom, you can hear what's going on out in the lobby.
Yes.
These, because there's that long kind of corridor to get in, it's very contained. So watching a movie and like the seats are comfortable. The image is always projected beautifully.
Yes.
You know, it's not like some of the ones where they're projecting it through the 3D theaters, so it's dim.
Or Roy Thompson Hall, where it's on the stage, not mental.
Exactly. And the sound is fantastic. So along with the fact that it's just to watch any film, it's probably my theater of choice. What they've brought there this year has been unreal. Like between stuff like Incendie and
Tree of Life
they had for the longest time. They've brought like all these classics that I've always wanted to see. So they brought stuff like Anatomy of Murder and
Saturday Afternoon.
It's not just for highbrow stuff. They've been bringing in, they brought in Mary Poppins. Next week you guys are going to see Ferris Bueller. They are really, really, really trying to spread like what we do, like the love of cinema and getting together with people and seeing things the way they were first intended to be seen. I did not in my wildest dreams imagine that this venue would, you know, be as well done as it is and that I would be going there as often as I do.
Yeah.
We were talking earlier, like we get schedules. We get like what, four times a year or so? Like
they're, at least, yeah.
They're like, I think they kind of plan out 3 months at a time.
Season. Yeah.
Thereabouts. Yeah. So four times a year, you get a schedule, you look through it, and you're just thinking...
And you get very excited.
Yeah, I want to see that, and I want to see that, and I want to see that. You end up seeing about half of that.
No, but you get very excited.
Yeah.
And they're long articles, and they're very well written.
Yeah, absolutely. And for what they bring and for how they've brought it, I'm amazingly thankful. And I really, really hope that their next few years, that they're able to really, really build on what they've achieved already in the first year.
Yeah, I hope so. Because it's still very under the radar.
Yeah, I try to...
I'm not aware.
I know. I try to spread the word. If you're in Toronto, if you're within earshot and you're anywhere near King and John, go see a movie there. You will really, really enjoy the experience. And specifically, the people who go. Like you were talking earlier about... you know, the people who don't fuss with their phones and watch
movies. Yeah, respect the film going in.
There's a little bit of that there every once in a while, but by and large, it's a kind of place that draws a certain clientele.
Film lovers.
Yeah. So. Yeah. We actually have the same number one.
We have the same number one.
Because and we couldn't not.
That's true.
Because of...
That had to be my number one.
Yeah, because of the crossover that goes. Why don't you get us started? The number one thing that we're both thankful for this year...
Friends.
Our,
okay, I'll be there for you.
our movie friends here in Toronto
are fantastic, and yeah. We love them all.
Yes, we do. We would name them one by one. You've heard a lot of their names already.
We haven't mentioned James.
James, Bob, Rachel, Sasha, Lindsay, of course.
Lindsay. We're thankful for Lindsay.
We're very thankful for Lindsay. Kelly, Kurt, yes. Shane, Rachel. Did we say Rachel already?
I think we did. Let's give her an extra
shout. Oh, sure. Shane and Rachel. The Mats, like both Matt. Matthew Brown, Matthew. Shannon.
I'm sure we're missing a lot of people.
Oh, I'm sure we are. There's two Corys now.
Are there Paolo, two Corys?
Yeah, there's Wait, Corey Tabb, Corey Pierce. And on and on and on and on. And I'm sorry if we didn't mention you specifically.
Sorry,
Courtney,
like you.
Courtney's another one. Steve is another one.
Kirk? Did we mention Kirk?
We mentioned Kirk. Yeah. Yes, we did.
I keep calling him Kirk. I don't know. It's like Captain Kirk.
I don't know. We're very thankful for these people because, you know, it all kind of just started as, well, you like movies? Yeah. Come on out. But it's not always just that simple, right? Because after that, what do you talk about? Like, you have to still enjoy the person's company.
Yes.
But we do.
And they enjoy ours, I would like to think.
I hope. You know?
I'm sure
I've told people they're wrong far too many times, but who knows?
I'm sure I've been quiet too many times.
We were talking about this when we got together during TIFF, is that this kind of circle, it seems like it's kind of unique to Toronto, because I know... Mm-hmm.
James was saying that.
Yeah. I know moviegoers in Chicago. I know new moviegoers in New York and London and LA. And I don't hear about this kind of thing elsewhere. Like, I'm sure, you know, there's kind of like critics that maybe hang out together once in a while. But I haven't heard about this kind of thing where they get together.
Andrew, didn't mention Andrew. Hi, Andrew.
Andrew, of course. Yeah. Jeez, what's wrong with me?
Yeah. Okay, go on.
Where they get together regularly, where they all hang out, you know, in twos and threes and fours and... Go see movies together, or just go to the bar, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really incredible what social media has allowed us to do, and really upping the ante on the social part of it. Like it's great that, for instance, okay, I'm going to use the story of you and James, because as far as I know, you found each other like through Twitter, like, you know.
I think so. And then I don't know how he thought I would be right for this blog.
But he invited you out.
He invited me out.
Now, you take that on paper. Somebody who you haven't like met face to face is saying, hey, there's a bunch of like-minded people. Why don't you come out?
Well, I think I met him once face to face. And for some reason, he saw something in me that I still don't know what he saw.
But you know, a lot of people might think, oh, no, that's okay. I'm just going to go home and I'm going to do whatever I'm going to do. And I'm just going to rely on social media for the way social media runs, but to actually up the human part of that, you know,
real connection.
Yeah. It's been amazing. Is what it's nothing short of that. And you know, they're by far some of my closest friends now.
They're people that I want to spend time with, and I'm very antisocial. And when someone like Lindsay says, hey, let's all go out to see, you know, Ferris Bueller, I'd rather go home and, you know, be on my own. But then these are people that I want to... I was in a really crappy mood when we saw West Side Story at the Lightbox, so we're tying in together all the things we're thankful for. And I thought, you know, these are people that will still be fine with me, and they'll put me in a good mood, and... And so I'm very thankful for them.
That's good.
West Side Story.
And West Side Story. Well,
Lee is ruining.
And that's the thing. Like, I, you know, while we're thankful for all of these geeky little things that we do, you know, we're thankful for the DVDs and thankful for
popcorn.
Twitter and popcorn. We are, of course, thankful for the people in our lives the most, and certainly thankful that a lot of people understand our level of geekery.
Yes, and who don't look at us like we're total freaks of nature.
No. No.
We love seeing lots and lots of movies.
There we go. God bless us, everyone.
Yes.
Well, that's all for this episode of the Matinee Cast. Come on back for episode 43 on October 24th. We'll be talking about George Clooney in his new movie, The Ides of March. Your main outlet for telling the world your opinions on all sorts of things is Twitter. Where can people find you on Twitter?
My name, Leora Helbron. The people cannot pronounce?
I got it.
He got it. Ryan got it. You got the proper German pronunciation.
Spell for people.
So it's, I guess I should spell my whole name. So it's LeoraHeilBronn. And James said that he would listen to me recite just letters. And so there you have it.
You're James. Welcome, James. If he hasn't listened to this, I'm going to like beats for him.
Force him. You have to listen.
There we go. My own blog is thematinee.ca. For more podcasting content, you can find back episodes of this podcast on thematinee.ca/podcasting. You can find them on mypodcast.com, Blueberry, and the iTunes Music Store, all of which give you handy ways to subscribe for free and get alerts when new episodes drop. I love feedback, so send me some on 5050, on things that you're thankful for, and especially on the horror list, which you can find again at thematinee.ca/confession. All other feedback you can send to Twitter at matinee_ca, Ryan at thematinee.ca, or Facebook, facebook.com/darkmatinee. I think you should take Lindsay and go see Drive.
You're not coming with?
I've already seen it. She hasn't seen it.
So, you have to see it again. See it again.
Oh, pure pressure for Leora.
Come.
For Leora, I'm Ryan McNeil. We'll see you at the matinee.
Thank you. Academic factory, you'll find me in the matinee, the dark of the matinee. Bedroom.